accession number 23200, reel 2.
Mr. Kidger, reel 2. We're talking about your wartime life, and it brought something to mind off tape that you wanted to go back to your school days to mention, if you'd like to carry on.
Well, when I used to go to school and study, and we talk about the rationing and different things like that, when we talk about how we used to go and get people used to get stuff, you know, if you do messages for them. Well, a lot of things we used to do, you know, I mean, we used to go up and collect groceries for people. Well, when he came back, he used to probably get a slice of bread with jam on, with no money, just a slice of bread and jam on. Also, what used to get, other people would keep their jam jars for you. And you used to keep your 2 pound jam jars and your pound jars, and you could go and take them to the local, the picture halls. And you get the seat in the pits and, you know, the stores and places like that, you know, swap them. Also, we used to do what you call messages for people that they used to buy tea, groceries and different things, that one. Well, when you used to get that tea, there used to be a coupon on the side of the packet. And if you collected so many of them coupons, you could take them coupons and collect a voucher from the shop you bought them from, which is entitled you to go to see the film, but only in the stalls and things like that. But overall, you know, I mean, with us being brought up in them conditions, you know, they had to fight for yourself and look after yourself, you know, and to say that word. When the war came, we automatically knew exactly how to look after ourselves. And my father and that, you know what I mean? He was, what I call, he's a hard-working person, you know. And he was the one that brought her up.
Were any of your older, how far in the 10 were you? You weren't the oldest, I know, you weren't
the... The oldest one, Tommy, Jimmy, he would have been, what I mean? I had the, you see, it was like 2 years ago. I'm 76 now. The next one up would be George. He would be 2 years old, which would be 78. He would have been 78. He's dead. The next one up was our Bill. He would have been 2 years up. And then that would have made him 80. And then I went from Bill to Tommy. He would have been about 82, 83. He's alive. That was the one that was in the Air Force. And then Jimmy, he would be older still, so he would be about 88, 89.
And were any of them called up when the war started? I mean, before you were.
Tommy was in what I call it. He was working for Rerolls. What I call gearworks. Not gearworks. They make what I call, you know, electric compartments. Yeah. You know, I mean, the BICC, I think, was got their firm now. A big firm on the Tyne. He was working there, and he was exempt from the forces, and he didn't want to be. And what he done, he went and joined up. And when he would have called it, joined up, Rerolls didn't like it, because I had to keep the skilled men. But he was determined to go. Anyway, he joined the forces, and he was sent away to Canada to train as a pilot, you know. And he came back from Canada, back to this country, and he started flying, you know, over here. But he was flying Lancaster bombers, dead. Well, naturally, with him being in the RAF, when I come to be about 17, 17 and a half, I had to register, which everybody had to register 6 months before the...
He was the only one that was in this?
He was the only one during the war, apart from myself. The other ones, what I call it, the other two, they got called up after the war in what he'd done, what he called a 2 year service.
Now, what about the air raids? That's what I wanted to do before we go into when you were called up. Were you much aware of the air raids?
Oh, yes.
How bad was it in your area?
Well, I had a lot of bombing. There was a lot of brick, you know, I mean, the different things was dropped, you know. It was what you call landmines. They used to come down on a parachute. There was a lot of damage done by them, you know. And I don't know. You see, with me being in the painting and decorating business, I mean, only going around doing blackouts, if they drop bombs, a lot of windows get broken. And that's when we had to go and put the glass back in. Well, it wasn't the best of glass. It was like a frosted glass. In other words, is you could get the light through, but you didn't get, you know, you could see through, but not clear. Now, we had to put our glass in back in the windows, you know. We had plenty of, you know, plenty of work as apprentices at the time. And there was a lot of places, you know, I mean, in heaven, we had what you call four lakes, or handmade lakes. Now, they were made by the quarry. Well, alongside of it was what you call a coke ovens. Now, looking from a distance, it looked like a ship. Now, the coke ovens belonged to a firm in Germany. And, of course, you used to use that as a guideline, you know, coming in and using what you knew exactly where it was. You used to come in to drop the bombs on the Tyne. Yeah, some people would call it got bombed, which comes short, you know, the shipyards, the factories, places like that, you know. And it was a good few, what are called bombing, you know, I mean, in the area. I mean, both sides of the Tyne, you know, this side of the Tyne, and the, what are called the other side of the Tyne, you know. So at the end of the day, people would have called, you know, I mean, as soon as they had an air raid, you're automatically up, out in the area, shall I? And you stop there till they're all clear. And say anything else, if you were, what do you call it, if you were kept up too late and you were going to school, they kept you off school. You didn't go to school. But didn't stop you from going to work. So in other words, says, if you're up all night, you had to still go to work the next morning. There was no excuse saying, I never slept. Because there was no excuse. You had to go around, you know, work in the city there. So a lot of people used to use the area shelters for sleeping in, regardless of areas, you know, because they knew if they were in their own bed, got woken up, they got back in the area shelter, they wouldn't get back to sleep again. When they all clear went, 9 times out of 10, it was early morning, they had to go to work. Didn't like that.
So what did you do in your family, or what did you do? Did you sleep in the air raid shelter?
No, well, I only had, we used to be used the area shelter, but it was like everything else. The area shelter we had was big, and it's apart from the handmade one we had at the front, the one we had at the side of the house was the Anderson area shelter. That used to get flooded. Well, my father had what you called, he dug what you call a drain off, and there was a big well where the water automatically went in, and we used to bail it out. Well, when my father worked in the shipyards, he couldn't be at home, he couldn't be at work, because he had to be at work, you know. Majority used to be building ships, repairing ships. So what used to happen was, we used to work when an area came on, and it was forced in, forced out. Well, 9 times out of 10, not known, the area shelter used to be half full of water. Well, you know what I mean? You used to just jump in. Well, you know what I mean? You can imagine jumping in a pool of water. You got soaked. It was a bit, you used to get some laughs out of it. But, as I say, I mean, the bombing in it's just, you know what I mean? It's just that, you know what I mean? You would have, you know, you just started taking a stride.
Were there any close escapes near your house or for you, you know?
Well, about a quarter mile away from us was the council depot. Did get a, what I call a hammering. There was a good few people got killed, you know, in that area, you know. So at the end of the day, you know what I mean? They were dropping bombs all over the shop, you know. People used to say, you know, who's going to be next, you know. Well, you know what I mean, if they couldn't drop the bombs on the shipyards, it's just like, go them. No matter who got it, 9 times out of 10, you know what I mean, used to hit, what do you call it, people's houses and stuff. There was a good few people got killed, you know, in the area and stuff, you know.
Now, you weren't a member of the Home Guard or the ARP people?
I wasn't old enough. You had to be 18. I had a brother, what I call it, he was in the Home Guard. And as I say, he had to go to the coast and do his turn. I think he used to be, I'm not quite sure. It was three nights or four nights a week. It was to be down there.
But you didn't. You were too young.
Well, I was too young.
So tell me how you came to you registered when you were 17 and a half, so that would be in 1940, back in the 1942?
42,
aye. Anything else happened before then that you want to tell us about, or was it just pretty much routine?
Well, I mean, it's a funny thing. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, I mean, what happened between, you know, in between names, you know, is that your arena. There's a lot of things I could tell you about different, what used to go on, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just trying to find, you know, one subject to start on, you know.
What did you do for entertainment? I mean, during the war, because you were, you know, I guess 15, 16, 17, getting older.
Well, we used to go to what I call, we used to go to pictures a lot, you know, and think of one. And we used to go to the local hop, you know. Dancing, you know, we always had two left feet, you know. There was plenty to do, but the point is this, you know what I mean? I don't know, people are a bit scared in case they were too far away from home and there was a shelter there, you know, to get to, you know, because when you're at home in your own local area, you knew where the area shelters were, but if you got in a strange place, you didn't. Because they didn't know how many people could take an area shelter, you know. Some area shelters would have caught a vast amount of people, you know. And
did you drink at all? I know your dad didn't, but
I didn't drink, no. When I started drinking is when I nearly taught us, you know.
Yeah, we'll come to that, yeah. what about so how about when you were called up then?
Well, when I was
what was the first stage? You got registered first, what was that?
Well, what happened, what I call it, when I come to be about 17 and a half, I was due to computer register. I happened to be with my mates and said, we decided to go to Blackpool to see the lights. Well, I was told if I had to go to Blackpool, I would have to register at the Blackpool because I registered on a certain date, you know, which was the weekend, it was a Saturday. And of course, I went to Blackpool, and when I went in, they asked us what I wanted to do. Well, naturally, you know, your brother being a pilot, I says, I want to be in the RAF. He says, well, the only vacancy we've got in the RAF is a rear gunner. Well, I says, stick me down as a rear gunner, you know. And he started to laugh. He says, they don't last long. Well, I says, I don't care. I says, I'd rather be a rear gunner in be on the ground, you know. So it was right, rear gunner, the step one. Well, when I came back from Blackpool, I came back to work on a Monday. The gaffer at work found out about me, put my name down for the RAF. Well, the schoolmaster at the school where I was taught that one came round, what I call it, came round my mother and said, look, I'm getting deferred from the RAF if he joined the ATC. Their training corps. So it'll keep them out of the forces. That was unknown to me. Well, when I came home, my mother told me I'd been. Well, I said, I don't want to be deferred. I wanted to join up or get called up. So there was a terrible row on with the schoolmaster and my gaffer because my gaffer was losing apprentices. He was losing apprentices right and left, so that, you know. I mean, he lost six, what I call apprentices, which is a bit older than me. And out of them six, there was two of them was killed on the hood, right out. So at the end of the day is, I was determined for the turn round and join the RAF. But what happened was, I got my medical, and I had to go into the Navy. I was called up to the Navy.
Now, what do you remember of your medical?
Well, I think the funny part about the medical was, when I had to go from the medical up at Newcastle, it was very, very strange, you know, is, what I call it, you know what I mean, there was about 20 or 30 of us, you know, we had to go, and naturally we had to go through different doctors and stuff, you know. And at the end of the day, we all had to be lined up, we had to stitch on, one of them, and this, what I call, doctor, whoever he was, came along, and he had like what we call a walking stick in hand, he's looking for, what you know now, looking for crabs, or any body with hernias, anything like that, you know. Well, it was very embarrassing, you know. It was like doing the full Monty, you know, when you seen small, big, and tall ones, right with through. And shortly after that, I just took them at the copy papers and had to go.
Now, how come you were called up for the Navy? I mean, you just ignored what you'd registered for then.
Well, I was called up. I had to go to a place in North Wales, which was...
Now, when were you called up? Do you know the date or rough date?
It was it'd be 43, beginning of 43, middle of 43, I would say.
January?
It'd be roughly about that, I would say. I know I was called up really before. When I go back, I think I was ahead of my time. In other words, I think I had to go for a medical, and I got my papers before I was 18. Really, something went slightly wrong, that one, you know. I seemed to go sharp on anybody else.
So, you were called up round about January 1943 for the Royal Navy.
About that one.
And where did you have to report to?
Portland's Holiday Camp in North Wales.
Bethelly?
Bethelly. Mm.
Do you know what it was called? Because they had a ship now normally, or...
I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the different parts. Was it Glendower? It was Glendower, I'm not quite sure.
I think that's right, probably, yeah. HMS Glendower. And what do you remember about the trip there? Was anyone else called up from the same area? Did you travel with anyone else?
Well, I got me calling up papers. I had to go there. I had to leave the Central Station, Newcastle. And the train left. The train leaving Newcastle Central Station was 11 o'clock at night. Now, I never been to Wales. I didn't know where it was. I knew it was which part of the country it was, but I'd never been over there. But anyway, what happened was, my mates had set me off up to where I called Newcastle on my way. And of course, naturally what happened was, they wouldn't get to home, but they were going to wait on Newcastle Station and come home on 5:30 next morning, which would be the middle train going that one. But anyway, I left Newcastle Station at 11 at night. And I can remember I got on that train and there was no corridors. And I spent 26 hours on that train to go to North Wales. We were taken right way around the country, around Crow and different parts like that one. It was on account of the areas in the city there. And when I got to what I call it, it was 26 hours after when I got to Wales. And I never spent a journey later in my life, because I never had a drink of water and nothing to eat till I got to Wales. And I tell you something now, when we got there, the automatic give a groom, and I would say 50% of us fell asleep over the meal, which is exhausted, you know. And I always remember that journey. I never forget that. 26 hours. We were shunting round different parts on the West Coast because on the account of the bombing in this night, you know. And that's when we arrived there, because it was 2 o'clock, I think it was. Not the next morning, it was the following morning. That's when we arrived there.
And what sort of a reception did you get? You'd arrive as a civilian. Well, how did they take you in when you arrived?
Looking at it and seeing what you see today with the prisoners in this night, you know, you were hauled off the train like cattle. You all had to line up and you had to march. You know, it wasn't far because part of the train came into the camp. And we had to march to the canteen, the big canteen, etc. And before we got into the canteen, we all had to see who we were, what we were, and etc. You're standing there, never had a drink for 26 hours, had nothing to eat for 26 hours. It was hard going. We're just like prisoners, if you think about it, you know. So really, in a way, it was the worst part of me going up in the forces, is joining up.
And what about your accommodation when you got in there?
Well, there was three tours chalet.
What were the chalets like? Because a lot of them have been pulled down now.
I would say there was like three single beds tours chalet. There were, you know, in each block. I can't remember if it was either a name or a number, and it was a colour. And you used to call out, you know, and you know, if you were in that row, everybody in that row was on duty, just like Port Starboard, you know, first part and second part, that one. But it had a colour, and you had to be on that duty coat, you had to do your chores like anything else. It was the same with Grum. It's what it called. Whatever part of what it called row you're on, you had to go for your grub. Is that one? It was roughly, I wouldn't say it was a holiday camp. It was like a place, you know what I mean? I would say, you know what I mean? Some of the lads that was called up, you know what I mean? It was a holiday camp to them because they didn't know any other. Because what they were getting was a clean bed. Fresh bed, good groom, and never experienced before, you know. So really, in a way, it was a kind of camp, you know. It was like going back to school, and when you pass the exams, and you were put what you call, I would say, transferred from there to a private school. You know, it was restriction what you had to do, and it's not either. And you got your own bed, your own thing. It was like a dormitory, you know. And I always thought, if I'd have experienced that, you know, going over to private school, I would have experienced what I've been getting called up. But I realised what people that's going to these private schools is, going through your training, the type of dormitories you were in, the type of restrictions you had to do, put me in the same picture as what they were. But some of the lads never knew anything other than, you know, have been harder for this, couldn't get this and couldn't get that, but it was a luxury to them.
What about, if we look at a typical day's training, it sort of lets us look at sort of a lot of things about your life. What time would your day start, roughly?
Well, I think we're called up at the, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a 6, or half a 6, I want to get whichever day it was. And you were called up for breakfast.
Would you have a washing facilities in the chalet, or was it a block at the end of the
chalet? It was like a block with a load of patients in, you know. 9 times out of 10, if you didn't get a force for a get a wash or get a shave, you got a cold one. And it was hard going, getting a cold shave and getting a cold wash. It was the same, there was no baths or showers. And if you didn't get this sharp, you got a cold shower. So really, in a way, you had to be up. If you were a good getter up, you were good. You got the best of things. If you didn't, you got the thing. But you had to get washed regardless, whichever time you got up, regardless it was hot, cold or what. But if you're up post, it was pleasure. If you got up late, it was just the opposite.
And what about breakfast? That would be served in the canteen, would it?
It was served in what I call a canteen. As I say, there was different blocks I had to go in.
What was the food like for you? I mean, you'd been used to, you know, home cooking. What did you think of the food? What was it
well,
like?
Well, I had a lot of porridge, you know. And I was a great lover of porridge, you know. And cornflakes was a luxury if you got them. I think you only got cornflakes. I think when you got them on a Sunday, why Sunday, I don't know. Well, that was to encourage you to go to church, and I don't know. But porridge, it was porridge this, porridge that, the arena. And I don't know, I would like a bit of porridge, but not as much as what they gave. You used to get too much, you know, whether it's to fill you, so you wouldn't be able to eat your, whether you're going to get afterwards, you know. Scrambled egg, you got afterwards. If you're lucky, you got bacon and sausage. Didn't get that. It would be roasty, you know what I mean? Kippers was another favourite thing you used to get, you know, in the morning. which I never used to. Keep us the first thing in the morning. So really, and then.
Well, let's look at all the food. Just I know it's not in the order, but what about lunch or dinner? What would you get for lunch and tea?
Well, dinner. I always thought you would have called. You know, I mean, a lot of these chefs used to practice. You know, meeting. If they were Irish, you got Irish stew. If they come from Lancashire, it was Lancashire stew. You know, I mean, he used to make Alkanes, and everything that was left over, no matter what it was, tomatoes, whatever was left over the day before, was put in. And it used to be a big stew, and he used to dish it out, you know. And when you used to look at it, you know, seeing the big lumps of stuff going in, you know. And if you're hungry, you know, you're doing that training, you were glad to eat it, you know. But what got me the most, this is breaking my heart, well, when he used to get bread, he used to get an enormous loaf of bread with a stew. Never seen loaves like it. Well, the first one on the table is lucky, you know. He used to get the crust. Well, it used to be passed up with a bread knife, you know. And you used to pass the bread knife, cut your slice off, and you pass the thing up. Well, it was that loaf was getting up the table. It was getting less and less, you know. So the bloke at the end of the queue, he was lucky to get a thin crust, you know. But everybody used to cut the width of bread, you know, they wanted, you know, to stay here, you know. So it meant that if you were at that end, the next time you made sure you were at the beginning of the queue. That's the, you know. But the bread was a big loaf, used to go up. Well, you can imagine people handle it, you know. You don't know where they've been, and it's like, you know, no, fair enough, okay. It was pushed up, and it was sliced taken off, and you took the slice off. The mate next to it, he took the slice off. And everybody's handled it, going away, up that one. So how in the world didn't die with, you know, with stuff like that?
So you get stew and bread for lunch?
Or and then you probably get, you probably get the, the semolina, what it called with the milk, stuff like that, you know. Or you may get rice, you know. Different things like that, you know.
What about for tea or evening meal or whatever?
Well, tea, used to make what you call toad in the hole, you know, stuff like that. Or you were lucky if you got, what it called, you know, the pasties, you know. And well, mostly corned beef pasties, stuff like that, you know. You never got a real thing. You'd probably get a rice cake or something like that, or a bit of fruit loaf. Now, fruit loaf was luxury. You would get that. If you didn't get that, you could get that from the canteen, nothing. But you had to pay for that, you know.